Chapter 35. Drowsy head upon her arm, Paul never cared. It was Florence. That was all he thought of. So, on Sunday nights, when the doctor's dark door stood agape to swallow him up for another week, the time was come for taking leave of Florence. No one else. Mrs. Wickham had been drafted home to the house in town, and Miss Nipper, now a smart young woman, had come down. To many a single combat with Mrs. Pipchin, did Miss Nipper gallantly devote herself, and if ever Mrs. Pipchin in all her life had found her match, she had found it now. Miss Nipper threw away the scabbard the first morning she arose in Mrs. Pipchin's house. She asked and gave no quarter. She said it must be war, and war it was, and Mrs. Pipchin lived from that time in the midst of surprises, harassings, and defiances, and skirmishing attacks that came bouncing in upon her from the passage, even in unguarded moments of chops, and carried desolation to her very toast. Miss Nipper had returned one Sunday night with Florence, from walking back with Paul to the doctor's, when Florence took from her bosom a little piece of paper, on which she had penciled down some words. "See here, Susan," apostrophe she said. "These are the names of the little books that Paul brings home to do those long exercises with when he is so tired. I copied them last night while he was writing. Apostrophe, don't show 'em to me, Miss Floyd, if you please. Apostrophe," returned Nipper, "I'd as soon see Mrs. Pipchin. Apostrophe, I want you to buy them for me, Susan, if you will, tomorrow morning. I have money enough," apostrophe said Florence. "Why, goodness gracious me, Miss Floyd," apostrophe returned Miss Nipper, "how can you talk like that, when you have books upon books already, and masterses and missuses a-teaching of you everything continual, though my belief is that your pa, Miss Dombey, never would have learned you nothing, never would have thought of it, unless you'd asked him, when he couldn't well refuse. But giving consent when asked, and offering when unasked, miss, is quite two things. I may not have my objections to a young man's keeping company with me, and when he puts the question, may say yes, but that's not saying would you be so kind as like me. Apostrophe, but you can buy me the books, Susan, and you will, when you know why I want them. Apostrophe, well, miss, and why do you want them? Apostrophe, apostrophe," replied Nipper, adding, in a lower voice, "if it was to fling at Mrs. Pipchin's head, I'd buy a cartload. Apostrophe, Paul has a great deal too much to do, Susan," apostrophe said Florence, "I am sure of it. Apostrophe, and well you may be, miss," apostrophe returned her maid, "and make your mind quite easy, that the willing dear is worked and worked away. If those is Latin legs," apostrophe exclaimed Miss Nipper, with strong feeling in allusion to Paul's, "give me English ones. Apostrophe, I am afraid he feels lonely, and lost at Dr. Blimmer's, Susan," apostrophe pursued Florence, turning away her face. "Ah," apostrophe said Miss Nipper, with great sharpness, "oh, them Blimmer's, apostrophe, don't blame anyone," apostrophe said Florence. "It's a mistake. Apostrophe, I say nothing about blame, miss," apostrophe cried Miss Nipper, "for I know that you object, but I may wish, miss, that the family was set to work to make new roads, and that Miss Blimmer went in front, and had the pickaxe." Apostrophe, after this speech, Miss Nipper, who was perfectly serious, wiped her eyes. "I think I could perhaps give Paul some help, Susan, if I had these books," apostrophe said Florence, "and make the coming week a little easier to him. At least I want to try. So buy them for me, dear, and I will never forget how kind it was of you to do it." Apostrophe, apostrophe, it must have been a harder heart than Susan Nipper's that could have rejected the little purse Florence held out with these words, or the gentle look of entreaty with which she seconded her petition. Susan put the purse in her pocket without reply, and trotted out at once upon her errand. The books were not easy to procure, and the answer at several shops was, either that they were just out of them, or that they never kept them, or that they had had a great many last month, or that they expected a great many next week, but Susan was not easily baffled in such an enterprise. and having entrapped a white-haired youth in a black calico apron from a library where she was known to accompany her in her quest, she led him such a life in going up and down that he exerted himself to the utmost, if it were only to get rid of her, and finally enabled her to return home in triumph. With these treasures then, after her own daily lessons were over, Florence sat down at night to track Paul's footsteps through the thorny ways of learning, and being possessed of a naturally quick and sound capacity, and taught by that most wonderful of masters, love, it was not long before she gained upon Paul's heels, and caught and passed him. Not a word of this was breathed to Mrs. Pipchin. But many a night, when they were all in bed, and when Miss Nipper, with her hair in papers and herself asleep in some uncomfortable attitude, reposed unconscious by her side, and when the chinking ashes in the grate were cold and gray, and when the candles were burnt down and guttering out, Florence tried so hard to be a substitute for one small dummy that her fortitude and perseverance might have almost won her a free right to bear the name herself. And I was her reward, when one Saturday evening, as little Paul was sitting down as usual to resume his studies, apostrophe she sat down by his side, and showed him all that was so rough, made smooth, and all that was so dark, made clear and plain, before him. It was nothing but a startled look in Paul's wan face, a flush, a smile, and then a close embrace, but God knows how her heart leapt up at this rich payment for her trouble. Oh, Floyd! Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried her brother, how I love you! How I love you, Floyd! Apostrophe, apostrophe, and I you, dear! Apostrophe, apostrophe, oh! I am sure of that, Floyd! Apostrophe, he said, no more about it, but all that evening sat close by her, very quiet, and in the night he called out from his little room within hers, 3 or 4 times, that he loved her. Regularly, after that, Florence was prepared to sit down with Paul on Saturday night, and patiently assist him through, so much as they could anticipate together of his next week's work. The cheering thought that he was laboring on where Florence had just toiled before him would, of itself, have been a stimulant to Paul in the perpetual resumption of his studies, but coupled with the actual lightening of his load, consequent on this assistance, it saved him, possibly, from sinking underneath the burden which the fair Cornelia Blimmer piled upon his back. It was not that Miss Blimmer meant to be too hard upon him, or that Dr. Blimmer meant to bear too heavily on the young gentleman in general. Cornelia merely held the faith in which she had been bred, and the doctor, in some partial confusion of his ideas, regarded the young gentleman as if they were all doctors, and were born grown up. Comforted by the applause of the young gentleman's nearest relations, and urged on by their blind vanity and ill-considered haste, it would have been strange if Dr. Blimmer had discovered his mistake, or trimmed his swelling sails to any other tack. Thus in the case of Paul. When Dr. Blimmer said he made great progress, and was naturally clever, Mr. Dombey was more bent than ever on his being forced and crammed. In the case of Briggs, when Dr. Blimmer reported that he did not make great progress yet, and was not naturally clever, Briggs Sr. was inexorable in the same purpose. In short, however high and false the temperature at which the doctor kept his hothouse, the owners of the plants were always ready to lend a helping hand at the bellows, and to stir the fire. Such spirits as he had in the outset, Paul soon lost, of course. But he retained all that was strange, and old, and thoughtful in his character. And under circumstances so favorable to the development of those tendencies, became even more strange, and old, and thoughtful, than before. The only difference was that he kept his character to himself. He grew more thoughtful and reserved every day, and had no such curiosity in any living member of the doctor's household as he had had in Mrs. Pipchin. He loved to be alone, and in those short intervals, when he was not occupied with his books, liked nothing so well as wandering about the house by himself, or sitting on the stairs, listening to the great clock in the hall. He was intimate with all the paparazzi in the house, saw things that no one else saw in the patterns, found out miniature tigers and lions running up the bedroom walls, and squinting faces leering in the squares and diamonds of the floor cloth. The solitary child lived on, surrounded by this arabesque work of his musing fancy, and no one understood him. Mrs. Blimmer thought him odd, apostrophe, and sometimes the servants said among themselves that little Dombey moped, apostrophe, but that was all. Unless young Toots had some idea on the subject, to the expression of which he was wholly unequal. Ideas, like ghosts according to the common notion of ghosts, must be spoken to a little, before they will explain themselves. And Toots had long left off asking any questions of his own mind. Some mist there may have been, issuing from that leaden casket, his cranium, which, if it could have taken shape and form, would have become a genie. But it could not, and it only so far followed the example of the smoke in the Arabian story, as to roll out in a thick cloud, and there hang and hover. But it left a little figure visible upon a lonely shore, and Toots was always staring at it. How are you? Apostrophe, apostrophe, he would say to Paul, 50 times a day. Quite well, sir, thank you, apostrophe, Paul would answer. Shake hands, apostrophe, would be Toots' next advance. Which Paul, of course, would immediately do. Mr. Toots generally said again, after a long interval of staring and hard breathing, how are you? Apostrophe, apostrophe, to which Paul again replied, quite well, sir, thank you. Apostrophe, one evening Mr. Toots was sitting at his desk, oppressed by correspondence, when a great purpose seemed to flash upon him. He laid down his pen, and went off to seek Paul, whom he found at last, after a long search, looking through the window of his little bedroom. I say, apostrophe, apostrophe, cried Toots, speaking the moment he entered the room, lest he should forget it, what do you think about? Apostrophe, apostrophe, oh, I think about a great many things, apostrophe, replied Paul. Do you, though? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Toots, appearing to consider that fact in itself surprising. If you had to die, apostrophe, said Paul, looking up into his face. Mr. Toots started, and seemed much disturbed. Don't you think you would rather die on a moonlight night, when the sky was quite clear, and the wind blowing, as it did last night? Apostrophe, apostrophe, Mr. Toots said, looking doubtfully at Paul, and shaking his head, that he didn't know about that. Not blowing, at least, apostrophe, said Paul, but sounding in the air like the sea sounds in the shells. It was a beautiful night. When I had listened to the water for a long time, I got up and looked out. There was a boat over there, in the full light of the moon, a boat with a sail. Apostrophe, the child looked at him so steadfastly, and spoke so earnestly, that Mr. Toots, feeling himself called upon to say something about this boat, said, smugglers. Apostrophe, but with an impartial remembrance of there being two sides to every question, he added, preventive. Apostrophe, a boat with a sail, apostrophe, repeated Paul, in the full light of the moon. The sail like an arm, all silver. It went away into the distance, and what do you think it seemed to do as it moved with the waves? Apostrophe, apostrophe, pitch, apostrophe, said Mr. Toots. It seemed to beckon, apostrophe, said the child, to beckon me to come. There she is. There she is. Apostrophe, Toots was almost beside himself with dismay at this sudden exclamation, after what had gone before, and cried, who? Apostrophe, apostrophe, my sister Florence. Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried Paul, looking up here, and waving her hand. She sees me, she sees me. Good night, dear, good night, good night. Apostrophe, his quick transition to a state of unbounded pleasure, as he stood at his window, kissing and clapping his hands. And the way in which the light retreated from his features as she passed out of his view, and left a patient melancholy on the little face, were too remarkable wholly, to escape even Toots' notice. their interview being interrupted at this moment by a visit from Mrs. Pipchin, who usually brought her black skirts to bear upon Paul just before dusk, once or twice a week. Toots had no opportunity of improving the occasion. But it left so marked an impression on his mind, that he twice returned, after having exchanged the usual salutations, to ask Mrs. Pipchin how she did. This the irascible old lady conceived to be a deeply devised and long-meditated insult, originating in the diabolical invention of the weak-eyed young man downstairs, against whom she accordingly lodged a formal complaint with Dr. Blimmer that very night, who mentioned to the young man that, if he ever did it again, he should be obliged to part with him. The evenings being longer now, Paul stole up to his window every evening, to look out for Florence. She always passed and repassed at a certain in time, until she saw him, and their mutual recognition was a gleam of sunshine in Paul's daily life. Often after dark, one other figure walked alone before the doctor's house. He rarely joined them on the Saturdays now. He could not bear it. He would rather come unrecognized, and look up at the windows, where his son was qualifying for a man, and wait, and watch, and plan, and hope. Oh! Could he but have seen, or seen as others did, the slight spare boy above, watching the waves and clouds at twilight, with his earnest eyes, and breasting the window of his solitary cage when birds flew by, as if he would have emulated them, and soared away. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.